960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
It is Pinder in the Morning, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. Welcome to it. Until 10 o'clock, it is I, Ryan Pinder, along with numerous guests. We have Darren Haynes waiting right now, breathing on the phone line, not climbing stairs, we hope. J.D. Bunkus will stop by in 20 minutes to recap a wild scene at the ACC last night as the Raptors tie things up with the Cavs. And it is a Tuesday. I know it feels like a Monday. It's a Tuesday, which means we'll talk some golf. We'll be yakking with the folks from Alberta Golf to see what's coming up in their regional schedule for golfers of, all different, genders and age classes? Yeah. So we'll figure out what's going on with them. Hainsey, how are you? How was the long weekend?
Oh, got roped into one of those domestic projects on the weekend. So I have little cuts and blisters on my fingers from removing nails and baseboards and painting and all that sort of thing. So
that sounds horrible.
Yeah, so it goes. But it was a good weekend for being indoors and doing that kind of stuff, I guess. Maybe I'll keep the fun stuff reserved for a sunny weekend.
Yeah, you didn't miss any weather. Boom had said he ran into you on the weekend. He would not divulge where. Where did you see Dean Mollberg on the weekend?
Where do you think I would see Dean Mollberg?
Hockey
Costco
rink?
In Okotoks, baby.
Whoa. One more time. Where?
The Okotoks Costco. Like, that's the place to be. Sorry, Okotoks, but South Enders, we're taking down your store. We're making the lines longer, and we're buying up all your groceries.
Was he mauling a hot dog or five, or what was the deal?
He was just kind of, I think, cruising around. I didn't actually know if he was up to anything, and then eventually he's like, oh, I think I got to go. So
free sampling, probably, hey? All right. Yeah. Well, there it is. Another long weekend in the books. I was in the Q5, zipped over to Windermere and back. 8-month-old twins, you love being strapped into their seats for 3-4 hours at a time. That's what I've noticed. No screaming at all. Didn't have to sing Old MacDonald 10,000 times.
Well, yeah, I'm so glad I'm past those years.
I'm just getting started. Lots on the docket for hockey fans this weekend. Memorial Cup gets started in Red Deer. World Championships wrap up in Russia. Back-to-back gold for Canada. And we now have a lot clearer picture of what's going down in each conference final. Tampa has roared back to take control of that series. And last night it was the Sharks making a pretty impressive rally. Two leads erased that the Blues had held. Thoughts on the weekend and how you sort of allocated your couch time?
Yeah, no, I was delighted to see both St. Louis and Tampa Bay even up those series, because I thought both would be kind of long. I don't mind as a spectator watching a nice long grind, 6 or 7 games. No need to have a long week-long break between that and the Stanley Cup. So let's see some good hockey. I think both of those series, the teams are pretty matched. I was pretty surprised, though, to see San Jose. Surprised and not surprised, I guess I'll say, to see San Jose take that one last night. I thought when St. Louis overcame the early goal and got that lead, I thought they'd, in front of the home crowd, I thought they'd maybe put that away because they were really impressive in game four. But now both those teams, Pittsburgh and St. Louis, who I have as the cup final, are, they're up against it. So we'll see if they can pull it out. I'm not straying. I picked them back at the start, and I'll stick with it, but it's going to be awfully tough for both of them. Maybe one of them comes back, but I don't think both of them do.
The goalie changes have been the topic of conversation in both these series. I am not surprised that the Blues went to Allen, not because Elliott hasn't been great, but he has. It's just that that's been a platoon all year, and if not for an Allen injury, he may have started the playoffs for the Blues, not unlike what we saw down the stretch with some other teams. Injuries, I think, in Anaheim influenced that John Gibson would start game one, not Freddie Anderson, who missed a lot of time down the stretch. Pittsburgh's a little more confusing to me because Matt Murray has played so well, and Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't exactly got big game goalie on his resume, or at least that's the stigma around him.
Yeah, I was surprised the way Pittsburgh has handled its goaltending, and I think it's got them in a bit of a spot. And I can't believe, I would be shocked if they go back to Fleury tonight. I mean, I think if you're a coach and you're looking at the situation, which would you have more regrets, if you went with Fleury tonight or if you went back to the guy who's done it, who's got you this far? I would be really surprised if they don't go back to Murray, and I think Murray is deserving. Fleury and Hallam last night, I wouldn't be comfortable with either one of them. There's rust on both of those chassis. This is not the time of the season to be working through that. You got to go with the guy that's done it over 6 weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you there, especially on the Murray front. It's just baffling to me because he'd been so good. And I understand things weren't, the last couple weren't as sharp, but I just feel like your best chance to win is with a guy that hasn't been collecting rust for a better part of, 2 months? Please.
Yep. So that's got to be the play. I think that your team, give them a little bit of a boost is goaltending changes. That's why they happen during games. Coaches make those changes. Often it's a dual purpose, but one of those purposes is to give that team a little bit of a spark, a little bit of a pick me up, and I think that's exactly what Pittsburgh needs to do. And I would be, like I said, surprised if they don't go back to Murray.
Moving on, your website, flamesfrom80feet.ca, has got some great stuff up there. I see you've sort of explored some of the potential coaching candidates over the recent weeks, an in-depth look at a name that many hadn't heard until this offseason. But I want to start with your latest piece, the Flames and a buyout window. You have the top five candidates for a buyout, and boy, is this a list of good guys and bad contracts. Why don't you walk us through it 5-1?
Yeah, well, there's really five, as I see it, that are potentials. Let's be clear, though, that this is not something that Calgary has done very much. In recent years, Nigel Dawes and most recently Shane O'Brien are really the only two guys that have been bought out in recent years. So it's not something that the team likes to do. Pay players to not play for that organization. That being said, I think there are definitely some guys that could happen this year because, they're not happy with how they finished last year. They're going to be bringing in a new coach. They're looking to change the mix, change the recipe a little bit. So I think more than ever, these guys could be in jeopardy. So Mason Raymond is one that immediately pops off the page because they were paying him a lot of money to play in Stockton, California last year. Now, why was he in Stockton is up for debate. Was it a Bob Hartley thing? He just couldn't jive with Hartley. Well, Hartley's not here any longer. Is there an opportunity for Mason Raymond to kind of restart this year? And I think that is, I've heard both sides, actually. I think there's people that believe that Raymond can be an effective bottom six player for this team if given another chance. I'm not sure he'll get that chance. He can't, they may need to, make this decision, heck, before a coach is hired. I doubt that. I think they'll have a coach hired by the time the buyout window happens, but Raymond is a guy who I can see them moving on from. So that's one candidate. Others that are for consideration, you look at the blue line, Dennis Weidman comes to mind, $5.25 million. That's a lot of money. But the thing with Weidman is I think they'd rather, if they can get maybe an asset for him or at least maybe pay just a little bit this year and just trade him, I think that's another option and that's a better option. So Weidman is a possibility, but I think it's more attractive if they can find a suitor for him, even if they have to retain some salary, which again, they don't have a history of doing and liking to do that very often, but this might be a scenario where it makes sense. I even looked at it. Let's look at Dennis Weidman, for example, $5.25 million. If they kept, let's say they agreed to pay, $2.3 million, they could still retain salary, bring in Weatherspoon in his spot, and still be a net $2 million ahead. So it's something to consider and see if Weidman is someone that they might be able to unload to a team looking for a guy that, it's probably third parent caliber at this point, but has the ability to play 25 minutes if you need him to.
Yeah. But one more, just to jump in there. So sure. You're saying if they play Weatherspoon in the, as one of their six or seven defensemen and they buy out Weidman, the savings will still be there. But what about next year? Because the first year, obviously we understand that, but the buyout's going to take place over 2 years, even though the contract is set to end next summer.
Yeah, but I'm talking about if they were able to trade him, and then that money is no longer.
I see. Okay, yeah.
So with the trade, well, then you're only looking at retaining for this year. Then his contract is off the books, as it is off the books. If you're buying him out, yeah, then you're looking at a 2-year kind of commitment salary-wise.
And you know, I was not paying attention. So very good on you. You're talking trade, not buyout. And that, there is an interesting thing with the buyouts. Depending on age, it's either 2/3 or 1/3 of the cap it that's spread out. I don't know if that makes anyone more appetizing than others, but it does seem to be all guys that are in their 30s, with the exception of Bolig, who's 29, that you've listed.
Yeah, and just actually to interject, the one name that's not here that some maybe have raised their eyebrows after last year's off year, and a lot of it due to injury, but he when he was in the lineup, he didn't put up the numbers he did, was Lance Boma. But Lance Boma would be 26 or older, so he'd be in that bio where it's 2/3. If he was 1 year younger, it would have been 1/3 would have been the penalty, and I think that might have been a way they could have almost got out of that commitment if they thought, ooh, you know what, we did mess this one up. But as it stands, I can't see it happening with Boma. So the other three on the list, just to run over them quickly, is Ladislav Smead. Now, his health will be a question mark, though. You can't buy out someone that's injured. That was the whole saga that happened last summer with Nick Backstrom in Minnesota. They wanted to buy him out, but he wasn't deemed healthy, so they couldn't. So he ended up just sitting on their roster for the entire season. So we're not sure, you know, Smead, what he missed the last probably close to 6 weeks of the season with another injury. So I'm not sure his situation, but I would see him and Raymond as kind of the two guys that would be buyout candidates. Smead is at $3.5 million. If they were to buy him out, that cap hit drops to just a little over 800,000 next year, and then they'd have to pay 1.3 the year after. So it's still, you know, with buyouts, you have to pay them longer, and that is certainly the downside. But with the savings in the interim, especially with Smead's situation, remember, we have other contracts coming off the books for Calgary. They have the Weidman contract if he ends up staying around. They have the Engelin contract. So there are contracts that are coming off the books at the end of next year. So being able to absorb a little bit of dead weight in terms of salary from some buyouts is a possibility. So we have Smead, Matt Stajan, I guess, would be the other one, and Brandon Bolig. I don't see it happening with Stajan. I think a lot of people would like to, just because of the role he plays and the money he makes. It doesn't make sense. I think this team is so young, though. He's a veteran guy that probably sticks around. Maybe we have this conversation with Stajan next year, next summer. And with Bolig, if you look at it, he's actually, if you deem him no longer really serving a purpose on the NHL roster, and there are a lot of guys that make a lot more money than him that have been sent to the minors, if that ends up happening, that's actually more attractive than buying him out. Yeah. The better solution for Calgary would be to play him in the minors than to buy him out. It actually would be cheaper and a better hit on the salary cap. So those are the five names I threw out there. But Bolig was more of an awareness thing. It really makes no sense to buy him out. But the other two, if I had to guess two, I'd say Smead and Raymond. I don't know if they'll pull the trigger on two. It would be so different than what this team has done historically.
It's funny because most of these deals, the bad deals on this team, are all deals that expire next summer. So the question is, how much cap space do you need for next year? Or if you can tough it out, boy, you've got a world of cap space in 2 years. Or if you buy it out, all of a sudden that cap space in 2 years, there's not as much of that. This is really a game of balance. Where do you want this cap space? Where do you need this cap space?
Yeah, so I don't think they want to cripple themselves moving forward. I mean, that's the last thing you want to do. But because of the some of the savings that can clear up for this immediate year ahead, that's the allure, right? That's the attraction. So it is going to be interesting to see how this proceeds. We'll know, you know, not that far away. The buyout window opens 48 hours after the Stanley Cup final ends, and it remains open until the end of June. So with some of these decisions have to be made, I guess not technically before the draft, but I think you kind of know what you're doing, but you can't wait. You can't like look at Mason Raymond. You can't wait and see how he jives with the new coach. You can't wait and see how the next training camp goes. You're committed by then, so you kind of have to make that decision sooner than later.
I would suggest that none of these happen. Partly because of what I mentioned before, which is that if you can just get by with 1 year, you're set. Pretty. The only contract we don't like that's still hanging around would be Matt Stajan's for a final year in 2017-18. But secondly, there hasn't been an appetite from the club to do this in the past. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Shane O'Brien's the only guy they've ever bought out.
Yeah, well, Nigel Dawes was another one, and that okay. was a little bit further back. That was under Daryl Sutter's reign. You know, and wouldn't surprise me for sure, but you know how dissatisfied they were with the way last season ended. They're looking for a way to reestablish themselves, change the mix, like I said. And you can't change the mix by going back to the same old mix. I feel like there's a real determination to take some steps forward. And to do that, you know, these guys are paying a lot of money, and there's going to be some big money on those contracts for Gaudreau and Monahan. Who knows what happens with Colborne? This, you know, the bio thing, just to give them some wiggle room to get back and headed the right direction next year. Maybe something they consider with at least one of those guys.
Yeah, interesting. The other wrinkle with Weidman, talking with people around the league, it sounded like the whole Don Henderson running over the linesman thing, Weidman didn't exactly portray the Flames in the greatest of lights, and many people wondering whether there is any appetite to try to start fresh between the two parties. Any thoughts or insight there?
So to clarify that, like whether the Flames and Weidman a fresh start?
Yeah, some people are thinking it went so far through that the Don Henderson concussion thing that both parties would be happy to just wash hands and move along because some not nice things were said or at least alleged between the two.
Okay, so in other words, suggesting a bio might be more possible for those circumstances.
Or just the fact that, hey, like we'll trade him and take even less, or we'll give you something else and take him. But I just think that's another added pressure point there. I don't know that the organization's keen to have Dennis Weidman here starting training camp. Maybe I'm out to lunch, but people that know more than I do have suggested, you know, that didn't go well when, you know, the league says, what did the medical staff do, and why was this guy on the ice? If he had a concussion, what about the protocol, all that stuff? And I don't know what happened there, but it sounded like Dennis didn't exactly do the Flames any favors there.
Yeah, no, I agree, completely agree with you. I don't know, like he did come back though at the end of the season, so you know any awkwardness is kind of there's some of that has already dissipated. But I think it's maybe not so much just that, but bear in mind there are players that have shown that they can play in the NHL at his position in that role of third pairing. And I think this team would like to see him start getting reps at the NHL level. So yeah, a combination of those two, I would not be like, I would say probably greater than 50-50 one way or another, whether it's trade, buyout, whatever, that Dennis Weidman is not with this team come September.
Fascinating stuff. I would encourage everyone to head to the website, flamesfrom80feet.ca, and have a gander. On top of that, give us a real quick sort of tease on the Jeff Ward piece you threw together. It's a name that we'd heard, and I didn't know much about him, so I'm glad you wrote it.
Yeah, well, Ward is someone that, you know, kind of a name that wasn't on the kind of the original. You kind of start going back to the coaches that have done it once before and that sort of thing. So I kind of started digging up on a little bit more about him. And, yeah, it's quite interesting. He has that, you know, Brad Treliving has mentioned he's looking for quality of coaching resume, not necessarily quantity. Well, what Ward has is a bit of a blend of both. This is not a former player. This is a guy that was a gym teacher. He's a kind of a professional coach. He's been a coach his whole life, probably 27, 28 years. He's kind of come up through CIAU. He coached in the O. He's coached in the A. And he had some success under Claude Julien in Boston. He won Stanley Cup. He went to the final with them. And then with term left, he went and signed a contract. He went over to coach in Germany and took that team and won the championship in that league. And then he came back and he was a coach or assistant coach under John Hines in New Jersey. They really went hard after him to bring him back overseas. So he's got that kind of, you know, resume in terms of success. He's been at it a long time. He's a teacher. He's a communicator. Some of the things that we're hearing that they're looking for. So it is a name that, you know, might be one of the names that, you know, makes a short list. Who knows? But it's a lot, you know, it's a chance to read a little bit more about a guy you may not have known too much about. But once you read his resume, you can see why there would be some interest there.
Yeah, and a good piece worth a read there as well. Hainsey, thanks for catching up on a Monday. We'll do it again next Monday, back to the regular slot.
Sounds good.
Darren Haynes, flamesfrom80feet.ca. Good thoughts on potential buyouts. I don't see it happening. I don't know that this ownership group likes paying people to not be here. They're already doing that for Bob Hartley. They're going to spend $2 million on someone to go away already next year. Do you want to make that four? Do you want to make that six? Do you want to make it eight? You can buy out a couple players. It's just not a real good use of money, especially if you're going to move a guy for assets. Now, most of that list, I don't think you can. Weidman would be the only exception that I think someone you could trade him and not have to, you know, line their pockets with gold to do so. We'll see. We'll come back and talk some Raptors. JD Bunkus on a wild night at the ACC last night. The Raptors, who were supposed to get thumped by Cleveland and were in games one and two, have somehow evened this Eastern Conference Finals at two, heading back to Cleveland. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Brian Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Lowry toward the right wing on the switch. He's got Smith. 3 seconds. Into the lane at the rim. Kyle Lowry, like a dart, just zipped through traffic and finished strong. He's got 35 points, and the Raptors have taken a six-point lead.
Wow, tied at two going back to Cleveland. It is one half of the genius behind the Free Association podcast, JD Bunkus, joining us from Toronto. JD, I saw you did the show live last night following Raptors game. What was that like?
We didn't do a show last night. Oh. We did one this morning, though. We did one this morning.
The pandemonium. I don't know that it could have happened.
It's I was probably a little too shook after last night's game to be on air, to be honest. I'm not quite that much of a professional, you know. Like it was quite the evening last night. Especially the way that fourth quarter was up and down. So Calgary catching the fever yet?
I watched more of this than the hockey game, and that would be the first time all year that that's happened. I'll do it with baseball a bit. There is a bit of fatigue when you get to round three for hockey, but this was an unbelievable game. If you're selling the product, JD, I think people want to come back and watch it again.
I just want to know, like, I feel like maybe it's starting to get it probably can't reach that level. We've had baseball in this country for too long of a time. Let's be honest, the Blue Jays were winning World Series when the Raptors were, you know, not even a franchise yet. So it's tough to quantify the two. But I feel like, you know, Raptors starting to get into that territory where they were last year, where, you know, common fan or, you know, not even fans of the team or fans of the sport are starting to at least tune in for the aspect of, hey, this is Canada's team. We're pretty patriotic. Like, we like to get behind things with the maple leaf on them,
sure.
and the Raptors have that. So I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but from the periphery, I think Western Canada is probably going to be picking up on this somewhat.
Yeah, and you know what? We've been asking people all day, and hey, I do share a morning show with two 40-year-olds from the prairies, so maybe that isn't the perfect representation of the city of Calgary. But the text line's been sort of half and half. Half said, I still don't like it. The other half said, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, stop being haters. That was great theater, and my goodness, if you like underdogs, is this not the best script ever? This is Bloody Rudy,
right?
Isn't it?
I just don't understand. Like, okay, so it's a Canadian team in a sport that we've been pretty much irrelevant in and that we've been discounted in for years and years and years. They're the pluckiest of underdogs, led by, you know, a guy who probably plays just as hard as, I mean, anybody in the NBA, and Kyle Lowry. I don't know how you could watch that game last night, regardless of whether you're a fan of basketball or not, and not like Bismack Biyombo. Like, I don't know what you could tell me that you don't like about him or the way that he plays or the way that he carries himself. Like, I don't get it, I guess. But I mean, if people don't want to jump on the bandwagon, that's fine. I just think that you're missing out on a pretty fun playoff run right now.
We don't like to roll around and bathe in all things Toronto, but I do have a question for you. The first week of Drake's new album had the highest number of album streams in the history of streaming albums, which obviously is, you know, the last few years that's a thing. Before that, it was not a thing. Where does Bismack Biyombo drop in on the Toronto power rankings? Because Drake is what, the king of the six? That's what they call him?
Biyombo had his own Snapchat filter in Toronto yesterday. he's massive. I would say if I had to power rank most popular Toronto athletes right now, Biyombo's number one, and it's wow. It's, yeah, like, it's, we're that level. Like, he's there right now. He's red hot.
If you want to get an interview with someone, legitimately on our show today, I know you'd think I'm biased because I'm a basketball guy, but if we were provided the opportunity to have Bismack Biyombo on the Andrew Walker show this afternoon, or if we could get Josh Donaldson or Morgan Riley, it wouldn't even be close in terms of who we would take today. It's a Bismack Biyombo day. So he's very high up there. And I like Drake's new album. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Took me a couple of listens, but I'm into it now.
Good. And that's the sign of a good album, right? It grows on you.
Doesn't fade.
Bother you as time passes.
People in Calgary hate me right now. They're blaring the country music. They're already on the country channel right now.
Listen.
They're mad. They're mad about this segment. It's okay. I'm sorry, Calgary.
If they don't
I'm
like basketball today. And they're listening to country, they've already lost us, man. They left us a while ago. It's all good.
Yeah,
hey, give us a little background on Biyombo. This was a guy they brought in to, I imagine, help shore up what the issues were last year, which was a team that could shoot the lights out but couldn't defend well. Give us more. Oh, he's from Congo, right?
Yeah, so this guy is a first-round pick in the same draft class as Jonas Valanciunas. And he's actually a guy that the Raptors toyed with taking instead of JV. I think he's still only 24 years old. Like, he's still a very young guy. He came into the league very young. He's someone who the Bobcats gave up on, and they were the Bobcats at the time, and now they're the Hornets, when they drafted him. But they gave up on him because he just provided nothing offensively, and they were a team that had a lot of bigs, and they felt like the right thing to do was to move off of this guy and to keep the likes of Cody Zeller and to draft guys like Frank Kaminsky. And right now it looks like some pretty poor managing, because Bismack Biyombo is going to get paid this offseason. Like, he's a guy who always was respected for his rim protecting ability and his ability to kind of stretch out and guard on the perimeter. And you saw that last night again, as probably one of the biggest possessions down the stretch in the fourth quarter was when Bismack played out on J.R. Smith and was able to force him into an air ball. Toronto goes down the other way, ends up basically sealing the game. So he's a guy that can play inside and out. He was known most notoriously as a guy that really couldn't catch the basketball. Like, he turned the ball over at a ridiculous rate last year, which was a big reason why the Hornets ended up giving up on him. He's gotten better at that this year. He's improved offensively. By no means is he, you know, an offensive dynamo. He still gets left on almost every single offensive possession, but at least he's capable, or has been more capable, of catching the pick and roll ball, finishing at the basket. He's done a better job with his free throw, so he's a much improved player. And I got to say, like, if you're looking at him from an offseason standpoint, it really sucks because he probably won't be with Toronto next season. It's going to be really, I know that my understanding is Masai Ujiri is going to pull out all the stops to try to keep this guy. I mean, why wouldn't he at this point? But from Bismack's standpoint, if you look at this series alone, like, Canadian Tristan Thompson, who's on the other side of the ball, who's playing for the Cavaliers, he got a 5-year, $82 million contract last offseason. If you switch those two guys in this series, I think that Toronto ends up being the loser. Like, Bismack Biyombo is just going to walk around to different GMs, and he's going to hand out, like, he doesn't even need an agent. He just needs that piece of paper that has Tristan Thompson's contract number. He just needs to print out his basketball reference page, walk around to different GMs and say, this is the number. This is what I'm looking at. And the other part of it is, I don't know why he would even if the Raptors could come up somehow and make some moves and shore up the cap space to sign Biyombo, would he really want to be a backup center at this point? Like, I know he's a good team player in Toronto, but, I mean, he probably would be looking to prove himself as a starting center in this league. And if you look around the association, there's probably a lot of places that could use him in that role. So it's going to be a tough prospect for Toronto to keep him here. But let's enjoy it while it lasts, because it's been so fun watching him do the Usain Bolt and the Superman and the exciting blocks at the rim, the finishes, and the way that he feeds off the crowd. I don't think that there's a player in all of basketball that feeds off the crowd like Bismack Biyombo does, and that gets the love back. It's so fun to watch him play.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that he posterized LeBron on what was called a foul, but that's as good as you can get at stopping the king in tight there.
Yeah, that was... I'll play a little bit of non-total homer here. I actually did think that was a foul. I thought that Bismack got him on the body before he got to the ball, but it was still a pretty exciting play. And I love watching Bismack react, go right to the bench, not say anything to the referees, and just sit right down. Yeah, it was good. It was pretty funny. Great night. Just a great night.
Couple quick hitters, and I don't want you to spend much time on them, but Biyombo's not that tall, but it's the wingspan that allows him to play the big man spot, right?
Yeah, and the quickness of his feet as well. Like, it's, you know, there's a lot of big, tall, rangy guys in the NBA. They don't move quite like that. Like, this is a guy who who moves like he's a much smaller player. He's got great wingspan, no doubt about it. He's not that tall. He's only 6'9", but his leaping ability and his length allow him to be such a great presence at the rim, and his quick feet allow him to move with smaller players and defend them further away from the basket.
Oh, man. And with the new TV money coming in, that guy, you're right. He is going to get P-A-I-D paid.
Yeah, he's going to be asking for probably about $15 million a year, would be my guess.
Wow.
That's going to be the type of money that he's looking at.
As for the rest of this game, I don't want to get too fascinated with Bismack, but apparently that's the thing to do in Toronto, so maybe we will keep doing it. I don't know. The two big stars finally both played well on the same night, and not just on the same night, but in the history of them playing together, they had not combined for as many points as they did yesterday. 67?
Yeah, both of them go over 30 points, and efficiently, too. Like, both of them were excellent from the field. You look at their shooting numbers compared to the first two games, like stark, stark differences. First two games, they were pretty awful. The last two, Lowry was 21 of 33. DeRozan, 26 of 47. Lowry takes 40% of his shots from three-point range. He went 1 of 15 in the first two games. He went 8 of 15 in the next two. So the only chance that the Raptors have in this series is that those two guys continue to play this way. And you got to give them a lot of credit because it hasn't just been that their shot's falling. Like, they've knocked down contested shot after contested shot. Like, you look at down the stretch last night, those are just, like, clutch big baskets. But I think the really great thing about what we're seeing from DeMar DeRozan is that he was such a frustrating guy to watch the first couple of rounds because he was really forcing himself into games, really settling for jump shots, settling for shots outside of 15 feet. This series, the Raptors have tried to switch him on to the defender that gives him the best matchup. And when he does that, he's been really smart. If it's J.R. Smith or Kyrie Irving, he's backing them down. He's getting deep post position, getting within that 15-foot range where he's so deadly, and finishing around the basket and causing havoc for the Cavs. So they're playing smart. They're knocking down shots. They're carrying their team. And they've totally murdered the narrative now that these two guys can't get it done in the playoffs. You can't combine for 30-plus each in a home game in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals and have people tell you you're not clutch. Like, that's dead and buried. Those two have proven that, you know, they're probably a core that's worth building around at this point.
All right, we're real tight on time. I want you to give me your greatest reason for optimism versus your greatest concern. On the concern front, Cleveland missed a lot of threes early, and when they came fast and furious. And secondly, they could not get a bloody foul called on the Cavaliers all night.
Yeah, honestly, they ended up with more free throws than the Cavs, so I think that narrative is just a little bit overplayed. I know the first half thing was absolutely absurd. I can't remember ever seeing that before. I know it has happened, but I couldn't think of one off the top of my head. I would say that my biggest concern would be, yes, that the Cavs did miss a lot of shots, but I would also say that kind of plays into my biggest reason for optimism, which is that the Raptors' defensive adjustments have really paid off. The first two games, they were really allowing Cleveland to get a ton of points at the basket. They were averaging something like 56 points in the paint through the first two games. The last two games, the Raptors have only given up 28 points per game in the paint, and they forced LeBron James to be a jump shooter. So I think that, yes, my concern would be I don't expect Kevin Love to continue to have the worst couple of playoff games of his career. I expect Cleveland not to go 3 of 19.5 from three-point range. But I'm also much more satisfied with watching Cleveland take those shots and the way the Raptors have defended the rim and the interior on defense compared to the beginning. So they kind of both play into each other.
Thank you for your time, sir. Check out the podcast, sportsnet.ca/590. Click on shows, free associations, JD Bunkus. Thanks, man.
No sweat, pal. Look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, we'll come back. It is a tee-off Tuesday. We'll get right to the links locally when we come back on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Oh, man, 955. Whoever would have thought Raptors was going to eat into our tee-off Tuesday time. It's happened, folks. Round 3, tied at 2. Deal with it. Not exactly a long weekend for golf out there. It's snow in Cochrane, chilly here. I was over the mountains in the Columbia Valley. Zipped over there with the old Q5 from Glenmore Audi. A little nicer there, but I'm golfing today. It should be good. as it high of 17. Let's say a good morning to Rob Forgener, who is on the Rules and Competitions Committee for Alberta Golf, because it's a Tee Off Tuesday.
Tee Off Tuesday with Ryan Pinder. Brought to you by Speargrass Golf Course, Calgary's most friendly and relaxed golf experience. For more info and tee times, visit speargrass.ca.
Rob, good morning. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Well, we're finally over that funk that is May Long Weekend. I don't know how long you've been in Calgary or Calgarian, but it seems like to not fail ever. May Long is a disaster, but it's past us now, so we can get the good weather back, right?
I think we're due for some good stuff, yeah.
Awesome. Tell us what's coming up for Alberta Golf and some events around the province.
Yeah, we're almost ready to kick off our season here. We have a number of qualifiers to start the month of June, all leading to our first championship of the year, the Alberta Open, on June 21st to the 22nd. And then we get into our provincial championships after that. So we're looking forward to it.
If people are members of Golf Canada, and most are with membership fees, or they'll keep the website for their index and all that, you will see Alberta Golf's logo up there. What is the role of Alberta Golf and Golf Canada in terms of these umbrella organizations for the sport?
Yeah, we're kind of the governing body of amateur golf in Alberta, similar to that of Hockey Alberta and hockey, I guess, if you will. So what we do is run a number of provincial championships, do the course rating for golf clubs, and provide access to the Golf Canada Score Center. Our provincial championships are kind of a lead in events for national championships. So you have to play in our events to head to nationals. So that's how, kind of from a competition standpoint, the umbrella works.
Awesome. Now, in terms of the big ones, you mentioned the Alberta Open. I'm sure you have different age brackets, the junior tournaments, men's and women's. When are the big dates for each of those categories?
Yeah, the Alberta Open is June 21st to the 22nd. The top 16 amateurs out of the Open are invited to play in the match play the following 2 days, and that's at Redtail Landing Golf Club in Nisku. And then we move on to the provincial championships. The mid-amateur is being played at Pinoca from June 28th to the 30th. The Sun Life Financial Alberta Ladies Amateur is July 5th to the 7th at Highwood Golf and Country Club. The junior championships this year are at Cottonwood in DeWinton from July 12th to the 15th. And then the Alberta Men's Amateurs, July 19th to the 22nd at the Innisfail Golf Club. The senior is at the Stony Plain Golf Club from July 26th to the 28th. And the senior ladies is at the Olds Golf Club on August 10th to the 12th.
Good stuff, Rob. We appreciate it. If people are looking for more info, where do we send them for either more info on those dates, registration, all that good stuff?
Yeah, that's just our website, albertagolf.org. And there's a competitions tab at the top that will provide all the information needed to for registration and to provide further detail on individual events.
Thank you, Rob. Enjoy the weather today.
And thanks for having me on.
All right, that is it. Tee Off Tuesday.
Tee Off Tuesday with Ryan Pinder. Brought to you by Speargrass Golf Course, Calgary's most friendly and relaxed golf experience. For more info and tee times, visit speargrass.ca.
Big thanks to Rob Forgener of Alberta Golf. That's it. We're out of time. The Jim Rome Show is next.
Get the f*** out of here.